RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. Josh, this week, I forgive you. I am actually glad that you shot me.
You're glad that I shot you?
Yeah, you know, I've been having this kind of nasty cough, and, that just kind of... kind of cleared everything right up there in my chest, you know, the Kevlar and all, you know.
Okay, all right. Well, that's good. And I'll try to remember that next time you're feeling bad. I'll keep my gun handy.
Yeah, and maybe I just need an injection, you know, or an inoculation next time. But you know, that's cool.
I'll shoot you with my cure arrow. How about that?
There we go. There was a lot of stabbing and poking and prodding and things going on in this episode.
I know. I felt like I was doing my annual checkup at the doctor this week.
I think Freud would be proud of the writers.
That's right. Well, this is it, man. The finale.
Oh, what? So you know what? I have to say right up here at the top, I am not sure which season finale was better, whether it was Arrow's or Shields. They both had great things going for them, but unfortunately on this episode, we're going to be talking about Arrow's. Well, fortunately, I guess.
Fortunately, yes. Fortunately, we have two shows to talk about, two great episodes, and this particular great episode was Arrow.
Right.
Okay. So season 2, episode 23, Unthinkable.
It's unthinkable.
Unthinkable. I could hardly think through this whole thing. I was so overwhelmed. That was way back on May 14th when I was overwhelmed. That's
right.
When I watched it.
It was very whelming.
It was very whelming. So I went above and beyond my whelm. This episode was written by Greg Berlanti. The teleplay was by Mark Guggenheim and Andrew Kreisberg. So with names like that, you know, it's going to be phenomenal.
Yes.
Directed by John Baring. Okay.
And he's done a number of episodes.
Me personally, John Baring?
Yes. I believe he's done a couple episodes at least so far.
This season, for sure.
Of the show already. Yep.
Yep. Well, for me personally, I need a hero. I'm holding out for a hero till the end of the night. Or at least until dawn, because that's when Amanda Waller's going to have Argus-level Starling City to get rid of Slade's menacing Mirakuru mercenaries.
Oh, nice. Trademark. I see what you did there.
Yes, thank you very much. That'd be a good T-shirt. But you know what? They should have had the masks and a T-shirt that said that. That would have been good. Just the mask, and then they wore the T-shirt that said menacing Mirakuru mercenaries, so people would know who they were, because the masks
invaded,
might not do it.
Starling City, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt.
That's what they give to people that right before they kill them. But so who's going to be that hero that I need? Detective Lance and his dedicated, although very outmatched, police force. A recently recovered Roy and his new mask. The loyal and dedicated slash love-struck Diggle and Felicity. I don't know. Maybe it's Merlin and his newfound love of his angry, bitter relative. How about Sarah and her League of Assassins girlfriend Nyssa?
Ooh.
No?
No?
No? No.
I don't know. That's a lot of choices.
That is a lot of choices.
Could be any of them.
No. It's Oliver. Don't you even watch this show? No.
I'm sorry.
No. Under orders of no killing, Oliver takes his rescue posse into the city with his cure arrows, while Diggle unleashes some old friends, I guess, to stop Argus. And Felicity does what she does best, act as bait.
Poor Felicity.
Know? So I know she's getting pretty good at it, though. You know, she used to be really bad as bait, but now she's actually.
She wants to be part of the team. She wants to be in trouble, or you know, unsafe.
It's working.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. I think to train her to be bait, he didn't have her slap water. He probably had her slap like earthworms or something. I don't know, but ultimately it comes down to Oliver and Slade in a showdown that Oliver can't win no matter what the outcome, or can he?
Well, we will decide if that is what it is in just a minute here, but we want to give you some quick updates here in our news segment. I believe we talked about this before, that Arrow was renewed for season 3, so gosh, don't think like this just ends like this and they set up all this stuff and they never coming back. So they will return Wednesdays at 8 p.m. They're going to keep the same time slot. We don't know what date they will be returning, but stay tuned to this Arrow station, and we'll keep you updated on that. And also, we got news.
And our Facebook page. We'll make sure we post on our Facebook page, too.
Yes, yes. And The Flash will be coming on Tuesdays at 8. Now, while it's not going to be a back-to-back Arrow-Flash team-up night, it is on two consecutive nights, so I think that's pretty good. It's not like you have to wait like 3 or 4 days in between episodes. You can catch Flash the first night and then sit down the next night and watch Arrow.
No, but you know what I'm going to do? I am going to watch them back to back.
You know what? That actually sounds like a great idea.
I mean, that's probably what I would do just out of necessity. I mean, for my schedule, because I have kind of a busy schedule with kids and work and everything. And so, I mean, I DVR everything anyway, so I will probably watch them back to back.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people will be doing that. That's true. I mean, I don't know how many of our listeners out there are doing like time shifted viewing and stuff like that, but it seems like more and more people are. So,
that's pretty much the norm now.
That will be a brave and bold idea, Josh.
I came up with that. That's all mine.
Oh, good, good. And then today, I just saw this news. I don't know if you had even seen this yet, but John Barrowman was just signed as a series regular for next season.
Hold on. Brave and bold. I got it. Sorry. It just took me a second. Yes, John Barrowman's going to be a regular.
I'm sorry. Are you caught up now?
I did. Yes.
We're going to be talking about The Flash soon, dude. You got to keep up. It goes fast.
I haven't been struck by lightning yet. Give me a break.
So John Barrowman, series regular, right?
Yes, John Barrowman. So that's really cool. I mean, that... I guess that tells you where the character is going. He's going to be around for a while.
Yeah, it really changes the outlook for what season 3 is going to be, because he wasn't even a regular for season 1, and he was in season 1 a lot. But then after only seeing him for, what, maybe 2 or 3 episodes this season?
I mean, yeah, not I think really three. Even...
It's more like, well, like this episode and then maybe like 2 shots in previous episodes. I think he had that one scene with Moira.
Yeah, he came on for his Mexican soap opera scenes and then left. That was it.
Right, and then the end of last week's, which was really just kind of a setup for this.
A setup for his next Mexican soap opera scene. Yeah. Sorry.
She's my daughter. Thank you for shooting me.
So,
anyway, that's really exciting. So, I think there are going to be a lot of training scenes of Merlin and Thea, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I agree with you. Maybe they'll do like a montage, you know, to get her trained really fast.
Well, it'll happen over the break, right, over the hiatus here. So when she comes back
that's true, cause
in
you got the whole
September, October, right,
real she'll timeline already be... Thing.
Like, what's your name? Is she going to be, like, Flechette? Or...
She could still be Speedy.
Oh, Flechette. Could be Speedy versus Red Arrow.
Ooh.
That could be really interesting. All right, anyway.
Yeah, well, it works. Okay, we'll talk about the...
Let's save for speculation. Yeah. As we get more information, we'll probably be doing a couple shows during the summer here, so we'll do some speculation at that point. And then also, another piece of news... I had seen this. I think you've got a little more details on it, but Stephen Amell is auctioning off an autographed Arrow statue. Is this like the Gentle Giant one or something? Do you know?
You know what? I'm not sure. It looks like it. It sure does look like it.
Yeah, it's one of those.
It doesn't say though on the bid. It doesn't say if it's from Gentle Giant.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's not a maquette. It's a. It's a full body of Arrow, but you know, it's not life size or anything like that.
Oh, It is Gentle Giant. Here it is. I found that.
Oh, you found it? Okay.
And yeah, I found it. It is Gentle Giant. It doesn't say how tall it is, but I think it's like the what is that, about a 10-inch, 12-inch, something like that, 10
or
maybe.
12-inch. And he's auctioning it for a charity, and the name of the charity is Prayers for Sophie. And right now it's up to about, $26,000.
Yeah. Can you believe that?
Yeah, and it's still got a couple days left. So it looks like the auction will probably be ended by the time people are hearing this episode. But you can check it out on eBay or, I guess, look at Steven's Facebook page. You probably will have more information about it there.
Yeah, and it ends at 11:43 Pacific time on May 19th. So depends on when you hear this.
All right.
If you have, a couple thousand dollars laying around and you want to bid at last minute.
Yeah, more than a couple thousand dollars, yeah. It's probably going to be up to like $50K at that point.
Oh, well, that's fantastic.
I think that's great. I mean, if you have some money and you want to make a donation to a worthy charity and you want to get a cool piece of merchandise, that's above my price range for this kind of thing. But, you know, to me, I would say, it's almost unthinkable spending that amount of money for this statue, even if it is autographed.
Unthinkable, huh? Well, You can think about it. It's definitely undoable. But speaking of unthinkable.
Hey, segue. Look at that.
I can segue with the best of them.
So we have got all sorts of cool stuff to think about in this week's episode. Let me just start off by saying, I felt that this episode was beautifully constructed from a from a writing standpoint. It was very artistic. It was very symmetrical, especially the intercutting between the battle at the end between Oliver and Slade on the boat and Oliver and Slade in Starling City, and there were lots of
I like that you said artistic. I agree with you on that. I think that's a good way to describe it.
Because I was trying to think about it, and it's just, you know, I mean, because this is, television is an artistic medium, just like film and like comic books. It's a visual medium, and the guys that are working on this, the executive producers and the writers and even the directors and stuff like this, they all have a really good grasp on what makes, what makes television work. That's different than what makes a comic book work, then it probably is different than what makes a movie work, because they're able to take those stories, and stretch them out here over 23 episodes, which, I mean, that is a really long-form story that we're talking about. Like, if you would be doing this in a movie, like we were talking about over the past 2 weeks, it probably would have just been these last three episodes. There wouldn't have been a lot of time for stuff.
And they would have had to do a lot of the backstory that they did early in the season. So it would have been, cutting things out and making scenes shorter. It was beautiful. You know what the fight scene, you mentioned the fight scene where they were cutting back from the island to present day. Uh-huh. It reminded me of a comic book. It reminded me of have you ever seen those comic books, where they'll have frames next to each other that mirror each other somehow, and it could be flashbacks or it could be two different characters or whatever, but it really felt like a comic book in television form, I guess. Yeah. It was beautiful. It was beautiful the way they did it.
And then just the fact that they had the way they revised the previously on montage at the beginning to take everything from Oliver's first meeting of Slade last season all the way up through Moira getting killed a couple episodes ago. I thought that to take all that information and put it into, like a minute and a half, very succinctly, I thought it was just really well done.
Yeah. Yep. The whole thing was a minute and a half. And speaking of last 2 weeks, I've told you it took them 10 minutes to get to the Arrow title slide, or what do you call that?
Card. Yeah.
The title card. There you go. And this week it took a minute and a half. So it was much, much quicker.
They got right into it. Got moving.
They did. They didn't have time to spare with everything they wanted to fit in.
Well, yeah. And the other thing is that they finished up what I thought was the episode. Like, they finished the dramatic the major dramatic plot arc, or the plot arc. I guess it wouldn't be the dramatic arc. It would be the plot arc. At about 45 minutes in, I'm like, holy moly, we still got like 10, 15 minutes left. And I was like, wow, they gotta wrap up stuff. And every time I thought they were ending it, they came back and there was another end. And I think, I didn't even count, but I think they had like four or five little wrap-ups at the end, which was great.
Yeah. And you don't see that for season finales much. I mean, usually they end on a big old cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
And this one did not. It really kind of wrapped things up. And I mean, you have questions, of course.
Oh,
but,
sure.
But not like, oh my gosh, you know, I have to wait 3-4 months to find out what happens in the next 30 seconds in that universe's timeline, you know?
Yeah, who shot JR, you know? We don't have exactly. Nothing like that.
No, I still don't know. No spoilers, because I don't want to ruin the whole thing.
Okay. I know it's only like a 30-year-old soap opera, so. But also in terms of it being symmetrical, I mean, you look back at, I was talking about just the intercutting in between the episode. It also, you know, was symmetrical back to the season one finale as well, with Starling City in ruins, you know, burning and everything like that. It had lots of echoes to other episodes, other seasons.
Other finales.
yeah. So it was really cool.
This is kind of a little bit off topic, but you just mentioned the burning city. My gosh, it looked more tragic and more devastating than the earthquake.
Oh yeah, I mean they had fires going. Well, the earthquake was really, I mean, it was really contained when you think about it. To the Glades.
This was and even that, everywhere. Even that, he saved half the Glades. So
right.
Yeah, it kind of made my heart sink, you know, when they showed those overhead shots with things just burning all over the place, and you see these people just running for, oh my gosh, just, yeah, that was much, much more tragic to me. But yeah.
Well, so I'm going to, this is kind of the question I want to bring up throughout our discussion here tonight. Who does the unthinkable? And I just kind of want to keep that in mind as we're going through everything. I think there are a lot of subtle, well, I think there's some really dramatic elements to that, and there are also some subtle ones as well. Some people are, you know, doing really unthinkable things, like Slade. I think that's like, you know, where it starts and everything like that. I think Oliver does some unthinkable things, and then there's, you know, people like Thea and stuff like that. So I kind of want to go through and just kind of work down through a number of the different characters here, and if there's anyone else that we can think of, we'll wrap them up at the end, okay?
Yeah.
All right, so Oliver's decisions that he makes in this show. So this is the arc that he's been on season two, is that in order to not be the killer that he once was and to honor the memory of his friend, he needs to, you know, change. And he has struggled with it. And this is something that you and I have talked about since season one, where we were surprised at the amount of killing that he actually did and how much he had reformed here in season two. So I was noticing that, you know, Oliver's main decision that he makes in this episode is the fact that he is consciously choosing not to be a killer over and over again throughout the entire episode. And up to the point where, I mean, he's telling, you know, people in the League of Assassins not to be killers, which, you know, it's
then it would just be the League of.
Yeah. It's the League of Sunshine and Rainbows? I mean...
See, that sounds like something that I could get accepted into. I'm not... Probably wouldn't get accepted in the Assassin one, but it's a smaller group.
I would like to think it's actually a bigger group, Josh.
Oh, good. So. I like to think that, too.
You know, I'd never want to be part of any club that would have me as a member, but... the thing that Oliver brings up in this, I believe this was he who brought this up. I'm looking at my notes. I don't think I attributed this, but he was saying to fight the unthinkable, you have to be willing to do. Oh, no, this was Sarah, I think, that said this. To fight the unthinkable, you must be willing to do the unthinkable. Because Sarah was going by her dictum that she's been going through for the past, I don't know, 5 episodes or something like that, that, you know, she's a killer, she'll always be a killer, and that's. that's where she is. Do you think that's true? Do you think that to fight the unthinkable, you have to be willing to do the unthinkable? And if that's the case, what is the unthinkable?
I think you can interpret that in different ways. You know, you could interpret it, I think, the way kind of it was presented and the way she was saying it is to fight the unthinkable, you have to do the same things that they're doing. Fight fire with fire.
Okay.
Fight evil with evil. But, you know, and I think Oliver could interpret this, and this is how I kind of like to look at things like that, to fight what's going on that you can't even possibly imagine. So the unthinkable, you have to do something nobody would expect you to do. You have to be surprising. You have to be unpredictable. So, and that's, and you know, I mean, I don't know if they, Sarah would consider that the unthinkable. I mean, the unthinkable is, look, I'm a killer. Killing's bad, but that's who I am. I have to do this in order to stop them.
Yeah.
Stop at all costs.
Right. And that's, I believe you're right. I think that's how Sarah interpreted it. But we see that Oliver, he does take a different tack towards it. But we don't know it at that point. He has already thought about what's the last thing that Slade expects me to do right now? Because, of course, at that point in the episode, Oliver has more information than the audience does. And that's how we've been living the entire season, except that Slade's had all the information, and we've been on Oliver's side, you know, kind of blindsided by these unthinkable and unspeakable acts. Whereas in this week's episode, in the finale, we now are on the other side, and we don't see it coming. At least I didn't see it coming, because I was so wrapped up with what was going on in the episode, like that just never occurred to me what he ended up doing.
And no, no,
I mean, and well, I know you people know me. Are thinking
never,
about
I'm
this.
I'm never very good at noticing those things. Yeah.
I was going to say, I know people are thinking about this, so I'm just going to get this out of the way now, because I understand that no one expects the Spanish Inquisition, but in this case, they did not show up. It was Slade.
No.
I mean, actually, Slade did kind of bring his own Spanish Inquisition to it, you know, because his main weapons were fear and surprise.
And surprise.
And, well, of course.
Yeah.
Right. I think I said that one.
Yeah. And anything else? Fear and surprise?
No, I think that's it. I think those are their two main weapons. I don't.
Two main weapons. Okay.
I don't know the rest. So. Anyway.
And almost fanatical devotion to Slade Wilson.
Oh, that is. Yeah. Okay. So three main weapons. But, you know, so Oliver, like, he's had this plan all along. And at the point when he thinks, when the audience thinks that he is doing the unthinkable, at that point, you know, he's apparently leaving Laurel out to dry. It's like, and that's what I thought was going. I mean, I have been hearing these radio commercials. I was surprised at how many commercials I heard on the radio Wednesday for this. I don't know how much you listen to the radio, but on my drive to and from work, I must have heard these commercials three or four times in the half an hour drive, both to and from work. And
wow. And now, see, I didn't even hear them once. I have a 3-minute commute. So,
oh, okay.
Were they playing something in particular?
Well,
the commercial, like a particular scene.
Yeah, it was because they were saying, you know, in order to, you know, to do the to fight the unthinkable, you must be willing to do the unthinkable. And then you hear Nyssa say that, you know, she brought an army, and then it says, you know, you hear somebody shout Laurel's name or something like that, and Slade saying that he is going to kill the one Oliver loves, and Oliver's like, do what you have to do or do your worst or whatever. And you're like, oh my gosh. I mean, he's, you know, he would rather save the city than save Laurel. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, like, okay, I understand this whole not killing thing, but you know, letting somebody get killed by omission is, you know, that's not much better, but Oliver had it all worked out at that point. I think we're to believe
that.
Yes,
he did. Yeah. Well, yeah. But see, that's what I mean by the unthinkable. So he was doing things that nobody would expect, and still standing by his convictions. And I mean, that to me, I don't, you know, I don't know. We may get to this later, but it, to me, it's a fantastic conclusion to the whole idea. It, that is what makes him a true hero. And I have said that many times this season when he was faced with this. In order to be a true hero, you know, you have to be able to succeed without going against your what do you call that? You know, your convictions, I guess. Yeah, I mean, you just without compromising
your morals. Yeah.
So,
well, you have,
anyway.
That's true. You have
good.
Stood up for Oliver when nobody else would. Everybody else said, "Ah, that guy's a bum."
I was hoping he'd give me a discount on that statue so I could.
yeah, I mean, okay, so since you're bringing that up, let's just go ahead and jump to which I think is probably one of the best scenes in the 2 short years for the show is Oliver sitting there having his one-on-one with Slade at the Supermax, at Argus Supermax in lovely Northern China Sea. Oliver says that, you know, Slade continues to say that he's won. I beat you because, you know, I did what I said I would. And, you know, I don't care. You know, I didn't make you kill or whatever, but, you know, I beat you. And Oliver's like, you know what? I had the strength to let you live, which I thought was beautiful. It's like, thank you, Slade, for teaching me all these things. Thank you for saving my life. Thank you for making me be a killer when I needed to be. And thank you for helping make me a hero. That was just, it was so poetic and beautiful. It was like the perfect kind of F you to Slade, you know, after
it was.
A whole season.
And you know, that one line in there that I really was, it fascinated me that they added this. I thought it was great that, and you just said it, thank you for making me a killer when I needed to be. You know, it kind of – a lot of people see things as black and white. You either kill or you don't kill. You're a pacifist or you're aggressive. But he brings up a point, you know, and it's a point that could be argued, of course. But there are maybe times where you have to be a killer. And you think of a time maybe where you're fighting a war, you know, and you're some kind of a soldier or a patriot where you have no choice, you know. And I think that line in there puts that in perspective that he did need to be a killer when he was on the island. He did need to do some of those things because that was the only way he could save. And you think back to first season when he had to stop the missiles.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, I agree with you. That was a awesome scene, an awesome scene. And I thought it was better than, a lot of storylines that we see in the modern storytelling era in movies and TV where, it's just really easy to just go ahead and blow away the bad guy and end it right there.
They are delving into another level of responsibility, I guess, for the character's actions. And they're able to do it. I mean, it's taken them 46 episodes. Can you believe that, man? It's taken them 46 episodes to get to this point, but it's all there. I mean, it's from the very first episode all the way through this one. You know, they all link to each other, and it's all about Oliver's journey to where he is. And now he can finally call himself a hero. Mm-hmm. Other characters have seen him as a hero earlier than this. Canary finally was recognized as a hero last episode. And so this was very fitting that Oliver finally gets that mantle for himself and will carry that proudly into season 3. And I can't wait to see what he does with that, you know, with this newfound power, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and based on some comments that some of the writers and producers and stuff, things like that, it sounds like they're going to delve into another kind of aspect of who he is and him becoming a hero. So I'm anxious to see where they go.
Well, the other thing I thought was really interesting on this journey, as Oliver is deciding whether he needs to kill or whether he doesn't need to kill, or, you know, what's he going to do? You've got Quentin on one hand who's telling him, it's like, I know you've been a killer before. You know, you need to pick that back up and, you know, you need to kill him. And which t- to me, as a viewer, I was like, I really don't see any other way. I mean, you can cure him, but
he's not going to stop.
There is still always a possibility that Slade will be back and fulfill these promises that he is making to Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, it's true.
Oliver has his convictions are stronger for having stood up to Slade, I believe. But then on the other side of that, you had Felicity standing up to Oliver saying, you know, immediately after, I thought it was a great little devil angel sort of thing because Quentin's like, you got to kill this guy. And Felicity's like, no, you don't. There are other choices. And I'm not sure if that's also where he started putting his plan into the motion about using Felicity as part of his unthinkable plan. I don't know if you saw any sort of movement for that, like where that may have first shown up.
No, I almost think it was when she said to fight the unthinkable, you must be willing to do the unthinkable, and he kind of started thinking about that. But then I also kind of see it could have been when Felicity was telling him, you know, you don't need to be a killer.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. They didn't really give any clue as to when that happened, which I'm glad, because then it was much more of a surprise, and you kind of
right.
You got that big reveal of what exactly he was doing.
Now let me ask you this question: so we find out that Oliver takes Felicity to his mom's house and says, "Stay here, you'll be safe." And of course, I think if anybody else is like me, you completely forgot that Slade had bugged the hell out of that place.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
I was like, oh, good. All right. Yeah, we haven't seen the mansion for a while. Oh, it looks great in the dark.
I was surprised they could get it. My first thought was, hey, how'd they get in there?
Well, he's
he doesn't live there anymore.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, he's like, I love you. Do you understand? And you're like, oh, my God, this is so touching. You know, he's confessing his love. We've seen all these little moments building up through the season. You know, his hand on her back and all this.
I thought I knew where season 3 was going right there, and I was completely wrong.
And then we see in the flashback that, oh, no, wait, Oliver knew that there were all these little cameras around the place. So it was all a setup, and he pressed he says, I love you, and then he presses the syringe into her hand and says, do you understand? And she nods, because at that point, she does understand. And my wife was saying she felt that was so cruel for Oliver to do to Felicity. Now, in my first viewing, I agreed with that. But watching it a second time, he says he loves her, but then he's giving her the syringe at that moment and telling her,
right,
asking her if she understands. At that point, she knows that it's not later when the audience realizes it. So we had to wait, 15 minutes to figure that out. She understood it right there at the moment, but I wanted to get your take on that.
Well, no, I mean, I agree with you. I think for a couple seconds, she kind of had that glimmer of hope, I guess, and whoa, really, is this what you, but regardless of how long, you can tell it affected her, so, because at the end, just the way she was talking to him, well, you fooled me or convinced me or whatever she said. And so, do I think it's cruel? No, I mean, I don't think it was cruel. I think it was a hard choice, and it was a hard thing that she had to deal with. But because of their actual relationship, I think it's okay. I mean, I don't know. That's hard.
I don't know that it's cruel. All this city. I know. Oliver.
You know what? I'll take Josh Licity, because I don't mind. I wouldn't mind having a little of that. But anyway, yeah. I mean, I when you say it's cruel, it kind of makes it sound like he was being mean, or he was doing something he really shouldn't have done.
He
but
was
it was really
with her heart.
An important kind of, but not for very long. I don't know. I don't think it was cruel. It was sad, but I don't think it was cruel.
Was it unthinkable?
Oh, Maybe a little unthinkable. I'll give you that. Unthinkable okay. more than cruel.
Yeah. Okay. And so then on my second viewing, I was really trying to pay attention to Slade because, as we've talked about before, bad guys aren't necessarily bad guys just because they're supposed to be bad guys. They are people that believe what they are doing is proper. Like Malcolm Merlyn in season one, he really believed that, you know, blown up part of the city or, you know, earthquaking down part of the city, whatever, was, you know, in everyone's best interest. And that was the best thing to do at the time. However, you know, demented that might be. Now, Slade is even a little more off his rocker than I think Merlyn is, though Merlyn's pulling in a really close second. They're neck and neck here, I think, considering the way that Merlyn was acting this episode. But I think Slade has some valid points to Oliver. I mean, he was, you know, basically telling him that regardless of what Oliver does, he had already won. And I feel that part of me says that, you know, Slade, you're that's pretty true. I mean, you got 95% of the way to taking down everything that Oliver cared about, but you couldn't pull it off. So does he get any points for getting as far as he did, or is he
Slade? SOL? Does Slade get any points?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you're giving out points, I mean, he all but won. Okay. I mean, because he really succeeded in destroying just about everything he said he was going to. I mean, he took down the city, regardless of whether he was going to go further than that or not. It's right. The city's hurting bad.
No DA, no chief of police.
No.
A lot of damage.
No, although those will be filled by whoever's next in line. They just fill those in. They just
sure.
ooze into those positions.
But I mean, they're like, oh, man, another summer where we got to rebuild our city?
Yeah. I mean, seriously. It's going to hurt. After one disaster, it's hard. But two disasters in, you know, within a year of each other, that'd be tough. I can't even think of a precedent in the real world other than maybe something that was happening during a world war or something. But, and you know, he killed his mother and he's done all this emotional damage to everybody. And so, you know, Oliver's lost his company. So I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I think Slade gets massive amounts of points. Really what he didn't do is he didn't break Oliver.
Yes.
That's what he didn't do. And ultimately, that was his goal, to break him. So he didn't win, but oh my gosh, it was a tie, and it was going into overtime, and they were getting ready to have a what do they call it in hockey when they don't have ties off. Anymore? Yeah, okay, there you go.
I mean, basically, so, Oliver won on a technicality. He kind of he outfoxed him. I mean, he did. He did that unthinkable, and of course, Slade knew every step that Oliver was going to make every time Oliver made it. And Oliver, you know, finally decided, I mean, even when Oliver thought, I think, that he was thinking out of the box previously, Slade was already one step ahead of him, except for this time.
Yeah. Well, I think Slade suffered from the fatal flaw of most bad guys is he was overconfident. He assumed he was going to win the whole time.
Well, and that's what he was saying all season. Yeah. I mean, he knew the outcome from the start, and that is true. That is probably his fatal flaw. But, I mean, not for lack of trying. I mean,
oh no. Well, like you said, I mean, like he almost won, but yeah. But he didn't succeed in breaking him, and that's important. That's important in building Oliver as a true hero. And ultimately, Oliver really did save a lot of lives again. Sure, there was a lot of lives lost and a lot of damage, mm-hmm. but. He saved a lot of lives.
And he did it without killing, and for the majority of the people working with him, without killing, except for Nyssa and poor Isabel. We'll come back to her in a second.
Yeah.
All right. So Thea, Little Miss Unthinkable. My notes here just say oy vey, because this girl is so messed up. Let me see if I can typify this. All right. So I am sick of the lying and the deceit that is going on in my life so much that I'm going to go off with my psychopathic father who, you know, may or may not have had my guy that I thought was my dad murdered and has tried to attack my family on numerous occasions and is happy that I shot him. That's how... What? I mean, what? Oh, Thea.
Hmm. She is a mess. Boy,
she was
getting
herself into... Now, again, let me just say that from a character standpoint, I think this is going to be a great place to go because there's going to be so many cool things that can happen. But she was kind of getting her life together. I thought they had a cool arc going for her, as we've talked about this season. She'd kind of gotten herself together after the whole drug and drinking issues and stuff that she had from the end of season one. But, she's going to go off and become like Hit Girl, I guess.
Yeah, well, I don't know that she actually knows what she's going off to become. I mean, I don't know that he told her
That's what she said. She doesn't know what she's going to do, where she's going to go, whatever, but it's just she's got to go and she's never coming back.
Yeah, but I thought a lot about this, about her just going with him so easily. And I don't know that it was easy, but it appeared to be. If you think about this from the point of view of somebody that has really been hurt bad by lies. So you think about someone who's been in an unfaithful marriage where they really put their heart and soul into it, or a family situation where maybe somebody found out that their parent was a murderer or a convict or a
Thanks
drug dealer or something
again,
like that. Sorry, I was trying to disguise it. I didn't say any names.
All right.
No, but you know, I mean, think and I apologize if this isn't an appropriate analogy because I didn't actually watch the entire series, but like Breaking Bad, you know, I mean, you imagine you found out one of your family members was doing something like that.
Wait, you didn't
and
watch
by the way,
the entire series?
Look, I knew you were going to say something. I know.
Oh,
everybody
we're
tells me I need
Bad
to
podcast next, dude. Because you got to finish that anyway. All right, go ahead. So
okay,
I understand. So I understand that analogy though. Yeah.
So when you put your heart and soul into someone, when you put all of your love and faith into someone, and that is taken away, it really, really does change your decision-making process. It really does change what you might normally do. And the truth of the matter is, that's it, the truth of the matter. Merlin didn't lie to her, and all the other people did.
I know.
So
I've always been
really,
right here
I don't
telling
think,
you the truth.
Yeah, and kind of. I don't know how long he knew she was his daughter. Because if he knew before he, you know, died the first time, then he was technically lying a little bit, but or a lot, I guess. But either way, that's a big deal. You know, if you have been told the truth by somebody and lied by a bunch of other people and it hurts you that bad, you might have a tendency to go off towards that other person, even if they're not the best person in the world, or they, seem to be not able to be shot very easily, or like to destroy cities, or like to monologue like a Spanish soap opera. So, it was kind of an interesting scene and different than the whole rest of the episode with the relationship between her and him.
Right. Well, let me add that. Okay, so she did actually shoot him. It did really not appear that way at the end of last week's episode, but...
Well, they left it up in the air. It could have been something else, but... No, point blank.
Yeah, but, you know... And,
did he really have to dramatically fall like that, though? I mean, he couldn't just, kind of back up a little bit and go, hey, nice shot. Hey, I'm glad you did
John
that.
John Barrowman. No? I mean, come on.
Okay, good point.
I mean... The fact that it's like she shoots him and he goes down, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. So Do we get a scene in between this before he gets up, or does he just get? Oh, there he is. Okay, he's getting up already. You know, it's like, really, you think you could put him down like that? You know, it's like, hey, he just kind of pops back up. It's Kevlar. Look at that.
Ta-da!
Yeah, exactly. Okay, now, I thought in the scene with Roy and her in the trailer where he was professing to her that, you know, I'm so sorry, I want to run away with you, you know, we're going to leave this city, I'm so happy. I'm like, oh, Roy, why are you saying this? Because he's going to go out. And he's not going to come back. I was afraid they were going to kill Roy because he...
I had that thought, too.
Huh?
I had that thought, too.
Okay. Yeah, I just... He professed his happiness. And you know what happens when characters in, you know, dramatic series like this do that. It's like, they bite it. But obviously he lost Laurel. I mean, he lost Thea at that point. So, because she's a big old Snoopy Snoop. No, I understand. You know, he told her to go ahead and pack up some stuff, but it's like, you know, don't touch the arrows that are under the bed. And why wouldn't he have taken those with him? I'm not sure about that. I mean, I know she was there, but anyway, he got a mask.
He didn't need arrows. He had a mask. Yeah. He wasn't strong anymore. Why didn't he take the arrows?
I don't know. I mean, like if she's there and he's like, oh, hey, don't look at my phone. I got to go. Stop looking. I got to go. She's like, okay, you know, it's like, what?
That's not suspicious at all.
It's a little ridiculous, but, you know, she's right there, so it's not like he's not going to be like, hey, can you look over there for a second while I retrieve all this stuff from under the bed? So I guess he just borrowed, you know, he's got a, that's his.
Hey, why don't you go freshen up?
Those are his day
See
arrows.
A squirrel?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. What I was hoping, although I really didn't expect this to happen, but I was hoping he would just tell her.
She's,
you know?
Yeah, I mean, because she, again, I mean, to the point she's trying to make to everybody, people keep lying to me.
You know, but you know what? I don't know how much of that he knew. I don't know how much of her situation he knew about because he was all drugged up. With Mirakuru.
Yeah.
So he may not realize how much she's claimed to be lied to, rightly to be lied to.
Which, by the way, when he woke up and tried to slug the Mirakuru guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, thinking that he still was super strong and just his hand bounced off, that was very humorous, I thought.
That was good. Good way to show, well, nope, he's cured.
Yep, totally good. He woke right up. And also the fact that Felicity lied to him. Did you catch that?
Oh, what did she say?
So
now,
Roy
I don't remember.
Was like, so I was unconscious that entire time, right? And Felicity's like, yep.
Oh, right.
You were out the entire time. Nope, you didn't wake up and try to attack me and wreck the lab or anything like that.
Yep. Oh.
So.
A lot of lying
sweet,
going on.
You know. So. Anything else you want to touch on Thea? I thought she was just entirely unthinkable for the entire episode, and I'm really looking to see what a hot mess she is next season, because it'll be the most exciting part. I mean, one of the most exciting parts.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the main story threads to lead up to either a mid-season climax or into your climax. Yeah. So,
well, because Merlin's obviously back as the bad guy, unless they step up another level and have you know him as a primary or a secondary bad guy, an initial bad guy, kind of like Blood was, and then we find out that there's something else going on.
Yeah, but if he's going to be a regular, if he's going to be a series regular, then either way, he's going to be around, and I don't know how far he's taking her. I kind of assumed pretty far, but I don't know why. I mean, I guess that just seems like it would make sense to take her kind of far away for now and train her or whatever he's going to do.
Did she have her passport? We're going to Nanda Parbat, so...
It's the Queen family, so you got to have your passport all the time.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I thought. That's where I thought he was taking her. So I'm anxious to see, but I think that beginning of season three, at some point close to the beginning, we'll see something with Thea if he's going to be a regular. So
okay, yeah, I believe they will be intertwined for quite a while. So and she will be a major. a major thread throughout the season. I want to talk about Lila's secret that she has here and some of the unthinkable things that she's doing. One is one thing that I thought was relatively unthinkable. She's actually going up against Waller. And I'm interested to see how that's going to play out, because it seems like Waller will be around for next season as well.
Yeah. At the very least, in flashbacks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we knew that Oliver knows Waller from, you know, before, from that 5-year period. So we're now going to find out about that. So Lila's pregnant. Okay. That's interesting. We could probably trace back exactly when that happened. I think that was at the Ostrander suite.
Yes.
In that one episode. And it looks like she was trying to tell Diggle that when they were entering Argus, when they were sneaking in. But, you know, he just said he loved her. So I don't know how much... why she would choose to keep that from him or anything like that. But
maybe she was just hoping for a better place to tell him. I don't know.
I mean, they were potentially about to die, you know, if this didn't work. I mean, there were so many.
Yeah, but they've been in situations like that before. I don't think she really thought they were about to die. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I mean, obviously it was useful for dramatic purposes, but, if she didn't tell him, I guess maybe she thought, okay, here, how about this?
Okay.
Maybe she thought that if she told him, he would have kept her from going in or something, you know, to save the baby or tried to convince her to forget the whole thing or something.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, obviously, you know, putting her at further risk at that point, he would have pulled her back, I guess. So, okay. Well, that's possible. And then Amanda Waller obviously also did a number of unthinkable things. First, she was, you know, planning on basically, like we talked about last week, nuking the city. Which, well, not, you know, just, but bombing it and pretty much killing everybody. Then she even stepped up the timetable after telling Oliver he had until dawn. Because didn't she tell the drone operator, it's like, just send it in now? Because when she saw everybody going out to the tunnel and she couldn't raise the army, she was like, all right, we got to take care of this now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they were all there. It was a good time, but. So it was such a good climax. Everything was just building on top of it, everything else.
When you had them going in and breaking out all of the Suicide Squad, unfortunately, the only one that we saw that we knew or that we recognized, I guess, was Deadshot, which I want that guy to be in more episodes. He needs to become a semi-regular or something like that, because I think. His delivery is just beautiful.
Yeah, he's become a really... I like the way that his character has developed. But, you know, he's still not free, is he? He's still locked in Argus, so they could use him again in a Suicide Squad capacity. I bet you that is coming.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, we don't know really what happened to those guys. Everybody got broken out, but the whole... What happened to Diggle and Lila and Deadshot and the rest of the people after... You know, Waller puts her guns down and everything like that. We don't know what happened. There's got to be some repercussions for that. And I'm sure we'll find out a little bit more about that next season. Like I said, I think Waller is going to be back in a number of capacities. As you mentioned, she shows up in the flashback here. So Oliver's finally off the island. Here in the third year, he will be in Hong Kong, where he will learn to fly. He needs to still learn to speak Russian. Get his tattoo. What else does he do that... he needs to grow his beard out and then get back on the island at some point before the end of the fifth year. He's got a lot of stuff to do.
Well, you know, he's got some time. I mean, he probably has some time to check in some of the sites in Hong Kong, too. You know, I betcha he'll take a day off.
I think they're going to change the opening of the show, though. So it's going to say, after 5 years on a hellish island, there's going to be a little asterisk that comes up and it says, actual island time may vary.
That's cool.
Because it's like, everybody, you know, again, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, why didn't you tell us that you were in Hong Kong? It's like, well, the writers hadn't figured it out yet. So
yeah, but we knew he had to do something like that eventually.
There were all sorts of things. Right. I mean, he's had all these other contacts. I kind of figured everybody would come to the island, but then the island would be...
Well, then it turns into like Gilligan's Island.
Well, it'll be like Lost Island.
Oh, okay. So also, you know, in addition to learning Chinese, getting tattoos, he also plays with the Harlem Globetrotters for a little bit, too.
Oh, that would be great. Because aren't in Futurama, aren't they like super brainiacs or something like that? Aren't they?
I think they'd have to be. Yeah. Just their heads, though, right?
No, they're actually still alive.
Oh, okay.
It's not just their heads. I saw that my son was watching Futurama, and they're actually on. They're actually the real Harlem Globetrotters are still around there. So, okay, we're running low on time here, but I want to take a couple quick bets with you.
Okay,
we're going to play Dead or Alive again. This seems to be a really fun game that we've got here. So, Isabel, Dead or Alive?
Alive.
Alive. Okay. So, didn't have her neck snapped? Because I think she had the cure put into her, and then Nyssa, like, snapped her neck or something. I couldn't quite tell.
Maybe it's just
she'll be back.
Chiropractic kind of thing.
So, if she is... I'm thinking she's dead, because that would... I mean, you would think it would be kind of easy for Oliver to get his business back then. I mean, who's... There's no one else around, right? I mean, like, she took the... I don't know.
Oh, you're right. Ah. Okay, now here's... I'm not hinging my guess on any kind of evidence other than I don't think they utilize that character very much. So I'm guessing...
That's true.
I'm going to go ahead and guess alive. It's not a very good bet. I'm probably going to lose that one. But
okay. All right. Then the one that really... got me. Like I said, I thought Roy was going to bite it, but then they kind of pulled the rug out from us here. Again, I did not see this one coming, and Quentin went down at the end of the episode and does not look good. Dead or alive,
no.
Quentin?
I'm going to say alive. They're passing around superhero mantles in that family. It looks like Laurel is going to be, you know, Laurel's going to be Black Canary. I think Quentin might be Black and Blue Canary.
Nice. Now, I think it would be... I know we've talked about, is Laurel going to actually be Black Canary, but I feel that I did not really like her when she came on the show, but Katie Lotz has done a lot to really, you know, get into my heart, and I don't see anyone else being Canary. So, I don't think that... I mean, it looks like there's a passing of the mantle there, but I feel that Laurel might actually end up being somebody else. I don't know who, but
I could see that.
Yeah. So
I could see that. And you're right. Now that she's been doing it for so long, I can't see anybody but Sarah being Canary. But hey, you know what? There's so much has changed since the beginning of just this season. I mean, I didn't really care for Laurel at the beginning of the season. I really liked her at the end. Didn't care for Sarah early on, you know, and she's grown on me. So, you know what? They could do it. They figure out a way to make it work.
They did a nice job of turning Laurel's character around and doing it in a way that it's not just like a couple episode arc. I mean, it was a full season.
Oh, yeah. It takes a long time to get over those big humps in life. Matter of fact, they even said at the end they were going to head to a meeting.
Yeah.
The two of those. So it's not really over. You fight that stuff forever.
Right. So we've got a few references in this episode, not as many as we've had before, but I thought they were pretty good. There was a quick shout out over the radio to Metzler Avenue, which is named after DC writer Brad Metzler, who's written some of the Arrow comics. And then the tunnel that the final showdown between Slade's army and the League of Assassins and Arrow and everybody happened in was Giordano Tunnel, which is named after longtime editor and inker at DC, Dick Giordano. He'd actually inked a lot of the Green Arrow, Green Lantern issues from the 70s.
Oh, cool.
And he had also inked Crisis on Infinite Earths, and I think he was the editor on that, and he's co-written a bunch of stuff as well. So,
ah, man, I love when they give shout-outs, even though they're subtle and most people don't catch them, you know, unless, of course, you listen to Green Justice and Arrow podcast. Most people don't catch these, but I love that they're giving shout-outs to people that you wouldn't normally associate as right. as the main people, but these inkers and these you know former artists of DC and things like that who really deserve a lot of credit because it's a lot of work and they did a phenomenal job. So
and that's the thing. I mean, so many of these people, it's like they create all sorts of characters, but you know they're not owners of any of this. You know, whoever I can't remember the guy that created Green Arrow right now, but you know, like he wasn't really seeing royalties from it or anything like that. You know, it's DC's, so. Unfortunately, you know, this is, it's great that they get recognition. It's unfortunate, that they only kind of get this kind of recognition, I guess. Then when, Dig and Lila were getting into Argus, there was a sign there, for level 7 clearance, which I felt just because it was so prominent, it was a very big shout out to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. since everything there is about being level 7. That's what, everybody on the team, well, at least the main characters on it had to be level 7 clearance to find out that Coulson wasn't dead and stuff like that.
Yeah, I assumed it was a shout out to our other podcast.
Oh well, you know that's true too.
Okay, all right.
The name of the army group that got killed by Slade's army was Easy Company. And in DC Comics, that is the army group that is led by Sergeant Rock in their war comics. So he ran Easy Company with all sorts of different characters there.
So much for that show. I guess they're not they're going to have a spinoff for Sergeant Rock.
Not going to be doing a Sergeant Rock show, no. But that was great. When I heard her mention Easy Company, that was the first thing that came to mind for me. I was like, oh, that's awesome. And then, of course, the fact that Leanne Yu got turned into an Argus facility. At some point, like, Oliver has told them that this island, which is a hellish place, would make a great, you know, Supermax prison. And there was a Green Arrow movie that was written and never filmed about, I don't know, about 7 or 8 years ago. And it was called Arrow Supermax or Green Arrow Supermax or something like that. And it was basically going to be Green Arrow had to escape. Like he was imprisoned with a bunch of villains and he had to escape with a few villains and, you know, they had to help him, but he also had to make sure that they didn't get out or whatever. It's, you know, it was one of those things where you got to trust your enemies, but just far enough to then put them back in a jail or whatever. Mm. And then, you wanted to point out the, all the different trick arrows that, we saw here.
Yeah, a couple trick arrows. You know, it's been a while since we pointed those out, but they of course had the syringe arrow that had the cure in it to get everybody the Mira cure you, yes. And then he used at the end to finally take down Slade, I guess, or keep him up, I guess. The bolo arrow,
and it was so multiple bolo arrows.
Bolo's arrow, bolo arrows. Okay,
bolos.
But that was pretty cool, and you know, so a non-lethal arrow to keep him pinned down there, and he didn't have the Mirakuru in him anymore, so he probably wouldn't have been able to break out of something like that.
Right, right, and like I said, he put like at least 2 on him, so looked like it was a lot. So anyway, well, Josh, it has been a pleasure doing a second season of Green Justice with you. This has been so much fun. I can't believe how much we've covered. This season, I was just kind of looking back at all the episodes that we've put together, and I can't believe, you know, how far we've come now. Like I was saying earlier, it's been, you know, 46 episodes of the show.
I know. I thought it might slow down or we might run out of big things to talk about, but it's just going faster and more interesting.
And the show keeps, you know, being very engrossing and wanting to have me keep watching it and keep talking about it with you and keep sharing all these cool tidbits with our listeners. So I hope everybody will will stick with us. But unfortunately, that is all that we have for this season and this week's episode of Green Justice.
And we hope you enjoyed it all. And you can go back and watch the all of season two again, and then listen to us talk about it again. So, and if you enjoyed this episode or any other episodes this season, make sure you leave some feedback for us on iTunes. Just get on iTunes there real quick. Give us some real good rating and type a little blurb to share it with people. You can also contact us by email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com, or you can get on our Twitter, which is at greenjusticepod, or visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
And you can also check out the other show that Josh and I do here on randomchatter.com called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. And since we will be off for a while through the summer, don't worry, we do have some specials planned for the off-season, and so we will be around. But if you would like to hear more from us, please feel free to check me out on my Star Wars podcast that I do with Chris Wyman called Jedi Journals, which is on forcecast.net, as well as the flagship show here on randomchatter.com called, surprisingly enough, Random Chatter.
Yeah, and you can hear me with my other good buddy, Shaz, on Techno Retro Dads, which is a nostalgic look at all the stuff we grew up with, and Tron Decoding the Grid, where we talk about all things Tron. Those are both available on iTunes, and you can check them out on shotglassdigital.com.
And, of course, if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends. And remember, if you don't keep listening, I will make you suffer the same way I have excuse me. You have failed this city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.